This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Overlapping emergencies make the specter of spillover conflict very real. The war in Gaza has explosive impact across the Middle East. Conflicts in other regions, including in the Horn of Africa, Sudan, and the Sahel, could also escalate sharply.
That was UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk on the threat that 55 conflicts around the world could spread. Details coming up also. The United Nations says Africa's debt crisis is worsening. And U.S. Vice President Harris meets with an Israeli cabinet minister today. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Today, the U.S. State Department honors women from around the world who have demonstrated exceptional courage, strength, and leadership to bring about positive change to their communities, often at great personal risk and sacrifice. VOA's Anastasi Tudashi is at the White House to cover the International Woman of Courage Award ceremony, and we have her on the line now. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Anastasi.
Thank you.
So, first, tell us a bit about what is going on there at the White House.
Well, what a powerful way to kickstart the Women's Month. A few matters from us. Here at the White House, the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Award ceremony, created by the State Department, is about to start. So it is co-hosted by First Lady Jill Biden and the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. And for this 18th edition, like the previous one, it awards 12 women from six different regions of the world who have distinguished themselves by their exceptional courage. They stood up for themselves and made sure their story, their fight, could help liberate others.
Anastasi, I understand that several of the honorees are from Africa. Can you tell us a little about them?
Yes, absolutely. Three of them are from Africa. And let me introduce you those three amazing women. Raba El Haima from Morocco, whose fight for undocumented children started with her own daughter and inspired a documentary called Bastards. Agathe Atuhaire, a renowned journalist, lawyer, and social justice activist who advocates for human rights, public accountability, and the rule of law in Uganda. And last but not least, Fatou Balde from The Gambia, who fights to end female genital mutilation and cutting, and she is herself a female genital mutilation and cutting survivor.
So finally, what is the next step for these awardees?
After that very emotional ceremony, that's at least what we can expect, the International Women of Courage awardees will conclude their visit to the United States with a dinner hosted by the American Women for International Understanding in Los Angeles, California. And it will also, during the ceremony, they will be provided with special grants to help them continue their work at home.
Thank you for your input, Anastasi. That was my colleague, Anastasi Tudashi, at the White House today. The whereabouts of Haiti's Prime Minister Ariel Henry was not known Monday, 3 days after he signed a bilateral accord in Kenya to pave the way for a possible multinational force to help restore security in the troubled Caribbean nation. A fierce battle between police and armed gangs took place in Haiti over the weekend, and a gang leader there has called for Henry's ouster. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Maria Madia Hello, has this story.
Haiti's government declared a 72-hour state of emergency after an intense battle between the country's police against powerful armed gangs over the weekend. Macharia Munene, a professor of history and international relations at USIA Africa in Nairobi, tells VOA the upheaval is concerning.
With Barbecue and his team saying they want Prime Minister Henri out, it is a revolution. We don't know whether they have been inspired by what is going on in the Sahel. The government was already incapacitated in Haiti, but now this makes it even worse, that they can go to a jail and just open up everything and release almost 4,000 people.
Barbecue, also known as Jimmy Cherizier, a former police officer and the leader of a powerful gang alliance, says the goal is to block Prime Minister Ariel Henry from returning to the country. Henri traveled overseas last week to drum up support for an international security force to intervene in Haiti, the Western Hemisphere's poorest country. In Kenya, he and President Ruto signed a long-awaited bilateral accord that paves the way for 1,000 Kenyan police officers to lead a proposed multinational UN-backed force that would help restore security in Haiti. Ruto says the urgency of the mission cannot be overstated.
It is a mission in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Haiti.
Henri thanked President Ruto.
We did this appeal and you step up and you said we want to help Haiti. We want to exercise a solidarity with you. Thank you, President. We appreciate it.
Munene says the signing of the document doesn't legalize the deployment of Kenyan police, given that a Kenyan court had deemed such a move unconstitutional in a recent ruling. Ekuru Aukot, a constitutional lawyer and one of the petitioners who brought the matter to the Kenyan court, said on social media that the signing was very misleading, that Henri was imposed on the Haitian people and had no capacity to commit Haiti to any treaty. The Kenyan government has not commented on Henri's whereabouts since the Friday signing ceremony, even after repeated inquiries by VOA. Munene says the Haitian prime minister should try to go back to show he's in charge.
So I don't know whether he's still in the country or he has gone to another country. We don't know for now where he is. But it's clear that in Port-au-Prince, the barbecue has said he wants to barbecue the prime minister as soon as he gets there. That may not be a very encouraging indicator.
Munene says what happened this weekend in Haiti may complicate matters, not just for Kenya, but for the other countries that have volunteered to participate in the intervention.
How they will be received from Haiti, we are being told by those people that they are not going to be received in a very nice way. They will not be given tea and coffee to welcome them. Instead, they might have to defend themselves in a very rough way. So the developments are not very flattering to the countries that are supposed to send police officers to keep the peace.
While some Kenyans support the mission in Haiti, Munene says there are many others who still wonder why their country wants to lead the multinational force, given that other countries are more powerful and better equipped, but have not been willing to step forward. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
On more on Haiti and Kenya, on Friday, Kenya signed a deal with Haiti to send 1,000 police to the Caribbean nation where violence is escalating. The two nations pushed forward with the security plan even though Kenyan President William Ruto faced stiff opposition at home. Haitian American Joanna LeBlanc, a partner at the Adomi Advisory Group and a former senior staffer in Congress on Haitian and African issues, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam it is not surprising that the deal, which has the support of the United Nations and the U.S., has been delayed for months.
In any democratic society, you're always going to have opposition, right? It's the norm. But what I think is important is that I applaud President Ruto for stepping up and being willing to provide some kind of relief to the Haitian people and leading this multinational force to the Republic of Haiti to address the insecurity crisis. And obviously the issue on the ground is dire because you're dealing with gang members that have even more sophisticated weapons than the members of the Haitian National Police. So that is something that's going to need to be addressed by the Kenyan police force. And then we also know where these guns are coming from, because Haiti does not manufacture weapons. There's been an arms embargo in Haiti for more than two decades now. And Department of Homeland Security has agreed to this, that a lot of these weapons are coming from South Florida, right, and other parts of the region. So if we're really going to address this issue beyond the Kenyan-led mission to the Republic of Haiti, you need to address the root cause of the issue. Stopping the illicit flow of weapons into the Republic of Haiti, one. Secondly, this issue is due to an economic crisis in the country, right? It is not driven.
Right. So if you don't address the high jobless issue, especially among young people, you're going to be facing the same kind of troubles, right, in the future.
Absolutely. It's not as complicated to address as it would be in other parts of the world, because it's not driven by an ideology. It is driven by lack of economic opportunities. So if there are employment opportunities for these young people, then you can see less and less of them wanting to be a part of the gang.
Getting back to the mission itself, which is backed by the UN and largely financed by the U.S., it's been on hold since January when a Kenyan court ruled that deploying these troops would be illegal because Kenya and Haiti hadn't signed a formal reciprocal agreement. So how did they get over that technical obstacle?
Well, from my understanding, one of the requirements was for that reciprocal agreement to exist. And Prime Minister Ariel Henry traveled to Kenya, where a reciprocal agreement was signed, meaning that members of the Haitian National Police will be trained in Kenya. So that meets that element that is required by the court in Kenya. So I think it's a good thing. It's moving forward. And we also saw recently the president of Benin, Patrice Talon, has also promised to provide police officers to support with the mission. I think it's going in the right direction. And the president of Guyana has also made a financial commitment.
Many people are wondering, or mystified at least, why Kenya has stepped up and they're leading this mission, you know, when Kenya has its own human rights problems and the country is facing major security challenges. Why Kenya? What's the benefit to Kenya?
Absolutely. And that is to be said for every nation in the world. You know, you look at the United States, that provides humanitarian assistance to countries all over the world, right? And provides military assistance to countries like Israel and Ukraine. But yet you have a huge homeless population in America. The cost of living is rising and inflation is through the roof. But it does not preclude the United States from its obligation as a leader of the free world to provide support when support is needed to its partners and its allies and friends.
That was our lawyer Joanna LeBlanc with the Adomi Advisory Group. She was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Damme in Washington. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is meeting with an Israeli cabinet minister today in Washington, despite objections from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The United States is increasing its call for a ceasefire in Israel's war against Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Donna Warder with the Associated Press has more.
Vice President Kamala Harris is meeting today with a political rival of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In the vice president's meeting with Israeli cabinet official Benny Gantz, Harris plans to press for a temporary ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war that would allow for the release of some of the hostages, as Harris said Sunday in a speech in Selma, Alabama.
Let's get a ceasefire. Let's reunite the hostages with their families. And let's provide immediate relief to the people of Gaza.
An official from Netanyahu's far-right Likud party says Gantz, a centrist, did not get the prime minister's permission for the Washington trip. And the official says Netanyahu gave the cabinet official a tough talk about the widening crack within Israel's wartime leadership 6 months into the war. Donna Water, Washington.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk warns the potential spillover of dozens of conflicts around the world is threatening global peace and causing human rights violations to surge in all regions. Turk presented an update about the situation of human rights around the world at the UN Human Rights Council today. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In his presentation, Human Rights Chief Volker Turk painted a frightening picture of a world where proliferating conflicts are devastating the lives of millions of civilians. He said humanity rarely has faced so many rapidly spiraling crises, noting that 55 conflicts are flaring around the world. He said displacement and humanitarian crises have reached an unprecedented scale as legitimate governments are being toppled and those in power choose war to resolve national and international problems. Turk said a wave of conflicts is battering people's lives, destroying economies, and subjecting millions of people in crisis to widespread human rights violations. He warns all these conflicts are having a serious regional and global impact.
Overlapping emergencies make the specter of spillover conflict very real. The war in Gaza has explosive impact across the Middle East. Conflicts in other regions, including in the Horn of Africa, Sudan, and the Sahel, could also escalate sharply. Increasing militarization on the Korean Peninsula raises threat levels.
In zipping through dozens of countries, he provided a grim snapshot of prevailing conditions on the African continent. He called the deteriorating security crisis in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo alarming. Turk commended Ethiopia for the steps it has taken in ending military operations against the Tigray People's Liberation Front. But he said the humanitarian situation in the region remains very serious, adding that persistent human rights violations in areas under the control of Eritrean and Amhara forces remain obstacles to durable peace. He called the human rights situation in both Mali and Burkina Faso very worrying. Turk also expressed concerns about deteriorating human rights related to elections in several countries, including Chad, Ghana, and Somalia. While praising Rwanda for improving the country's economy and well-being, he expressed concern about increasingly repressive measures taken by the government in the lead-up to July's presidential and parliamentary elections.
I urge rapid steps to ensure fundamental freedoms, together with genuine investigations into allegations of enforced disappearances, extrajudicial killings, torture and intimidation, as well as arbitrary detentions. These are indispensable to creating a conducive environment ahead of elections.
High Commissioner Turk deplored escalating attacks against LGBTQ plus people and their rights. He noted that discriminatory legislation and policies recently have been expanded, adopted, and are under consideration in several countries. Among those he called out for special reproof are Belarus, Burkina Faso, Ghana, Lebanon, Niger, Nigeria, the Russian Federation, Uganda, and several states within the United States of America. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations says Africa's debt crisis is worsening, and African leaders and economists warn that without reforms to international lending, the situation will make it harder for African nations to help their people. Darren Taylor reports.
Some international economists say a number of African countries owe almost $2 trillion in debt. They must pay back money borrowed from high-income countries, multilateral lenders such as the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, and private creditors. China is the continent's biggest bilateral lender, with about $90 billion in loans. At a recent conference, the United Nations Commission for Africa released figures showing eight African nations are now in debt distress, with 13 more expected to join them soon. In late 2020, during the COVID-19 pandemic, Zambia became the first African nation to default on its debt. Ghana followed in 2022, with Ethiopia defaulting in December. There are projections they won't be the last to fail to service their international loans. The World Bank says Congo and Malawi are just two of the African countries now in debt distress, with major economies like Nigeria and Kenya expected to join them. In a recent speech to the African Union, Kenya's President William Ruto became the latest African leader to call for the global financial system to be reformed.
The architecture is set up in a manner that if you borrow, it will be difficult for you to pay. We need a conversation around how do we get concessional funding? How do we pay as much as others are paying? How do we get Africa away from paying five times more? We're not asking to be favored. We're not asking to be treated differently. We want a fair financial system that treats everybody equally.
Meshack Mthuze, finance lecturer at the University of Cape Town, says African countries are not borrowing a lot when compared with the rest of the world. The problem, he says, is that global financial agencies often give African nations unfairly poor ratings, and that results in creditors charging them higher interest rates. Lenders tend to charge higher interest rates to countries that are seen as having a poor business and legal infrastructure, are exposed to political instability, or already have a high debt burden. Many African governments are having to slash spending, while interest payments are growing faster. Senegalese development economist Ndongo Sambasila says this means states don't have the funds to deliver adequate services to citizens because the money goes to paying debt.
One aspect of this debt crisis is linked to the fact that most of the African countries are still commodity producers. For example, they would export hydrocarbons, cocoa, cotton, etc. And generally, these commodities are subject to some volatility in terms of their pricing. Generally, also, their prices tend to diminish over the long run. And the thing is that most of the countries, even when they sell their commodities, they do not manage to, in a sense of retaining the maximum of their export incomes through better taxation.
So says Silla, creditors cannot expect Africa's underdeveloped economies, where millions of poor unemployed people do not pay taxes, to pay even more for loans than wealthy countries. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Today, the U.S. government announced new visa and economic sanctions on members of Zimbabwe's government for abuses of political, economic, and human rights. A statement from National Security Council said in response to new and continuing abuses, it is increasing its efforts to hold Zimbabwean officials accountable and is applying what is known as the Global Magnitsky Sanction Program. The new sanctions replace a program of penalties imposed in 2003, which the White House today said was not longer in effect. The Department of the Treasury is designating 11 individuals, including President Emmerson Mnangagwa, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, and retired Brigadier General Walter Tafamunye, for their involvement in corruption of serious human rights abuses. Zimbabwe's government denies allegations of human rights abuses and has said Western sanctions harm the country's economic development. The U.S., however, says its sanctions apply to only a small number of people and business entities. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.